You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many New York apartments have limited counter space and storage spaces, so the number of knives, mixers, saucepans, and other gadgets that we can comfortably keep in a kitchen can be severely limited. But even if we have a spacious kitchen, do we really need a lot of this stuff to cook good food? Joining us now to sort out the essentials from the extras is Melissa Clark. She writes a weekly column for the New York Times dining section called A Good Appetite, and she's the author of 32 cookbooks. Her most recent one, Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make, is published by Hyperion. And I'm very pleased to welcome you back to our show.
We're also taking
listener calls and questions about what people might want to keep, what they should get, and what they can probably do without. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's begin with knives. It seems as though there's a knife for everything, for cutting bread, cheese, tomatoes, steak, even lettuce, which I thought you only were supposed to rip up. Do we really need all of them?
You definitely don't need that lettuce knife. If you have one in your drawer, you can just go ahead and give that to Goodwill. You really just need two knives. By the way, I'm saying this as a woman who has about 15 knives just because I'm obsessed and I happen to have, you know, the space for them. But if push came to shove, two knives. You need a good chef's knife. You know, chef's knives come in various lengths, and so it's really important. Don't order your chef knife online. Go to the store and pick it up and hold it in your hand. I like an 8-inch knife, which is on the small side. Some people like a 10-inch or a 12-inch, but it's really important that it fits your grip well. So go to the store and try it out, and try it on for size. And a paring knife, one small paring knife, that is all you need. The rest are gravy.
The boning knives, the filleting knives.
I mean, a bread knife, if you are the kind of person who loves big, crusty breads, bread knife is great. And make sure to get a bread knife that's on the long side, because some boules of bread are really long, and you want the knife to reach all the way across the bread. So that's important. Don't get a short one. Get a nice long one. And you can use the bread knife for tomatoes as well.
What about the cost? Because the quality and cost of knives varies a lot. Do you recommend investing in an expensive knife?
You know, I'm of two minds about that. I actually have this stain. I have this sort of stainless steel, you know, very inexpensive $35 knife that isn't very heavy, and it's great. It is great. I wouldn't want that to be my only chef's knife, but it is. It keeps its hone. It's very sharp, and when it wears down, you throw it out and you get another one. Now, that said, I also have a good, heavy, you know, sturdy knife that I do know how to sharpen. If you're going to get a good knife, you should either find a place that will sharpen it for you periodically, or you should learn how to sharpen it yourself. It's not that hard.
Now, do you use that stropping rod, or do you like the electric knife?
I like the electric ones are great, and they're really easy to use.
But
except
it's another
they're big.
Thing
it's a huge
you're
thing
cluttering
to keep in
up
your
kitchen.
Those things are heavy and they're big. I just like the little the small little steels. Those are great. And also, don't forget to hone your knife before you use it. A honing steel will just realign everything in your knife and make it sharper. Do it maybe. I do it maybe every other day, but you can do it once a week.
What about cleavers?
Cleavers are fun. Cleavers are all show, though. You don't need a cleaver. If you have one and you like to chop up chickens, great. But, you know, a chef's knife will work just as well. I'd say for 90% of the things that a cleaver will do, you can use a chef's knife.
And kitchen shears? Can we just use regular scissors?
Not really. Not for poultry. For poultry, if you want to spatchcock a chicken, have you ever done that? Spatchcocking a chicken where you cut out the backbone and you open up the bird? It's one of my favorite ways to make chicken.
I like to watch people do it.
It's really easy if you have poultry shears. So if you're a fan of spatchcocking, get yourself some poultry shears. But you don't need them. Again, a chef's knife will do it for you, although it'll take some work in there.
We have a call just along these lines from Joel. Hi, Joel. You're on the air.
Hey, Leonard. Thanks. Yeah, I just want to stand up for my cleaver.
Okay, I knew somebody was going to call about the cleaver.
It's weighted. I do a lot of fruit smoothies, watermelon, apples. It's very, very fast.
And you like a cleaver better for that than just a regular good knife?
Yeah, because it's the motion of the whole arm.
I'm imagining a cleaver going through a watermelon and everything exploding.
No, the way you do it with a watermelon, you first of all, I buy it in quarters, and then I slice off, say, 3/4-inch pieces. Then I slice off the rind, and then three cuts in one direction, three cuts in the other direction, I have chunks.
You know, cleavers are fun to hold, too. I mean, they do feel, like you said, it's weighted. It feels good in the hand, too.
Well, and if you're a Chinese cook, of course, you do need it
for
Chinese cooking.
Absolutely.
What about gadgets like bagel slicers? Are they necessary? Because
people
cut themselves trying to cut through a bagel.
You know, people, please don't cut a bagel in your hand. You just use a cutting board and a knife, and you will be fine. The people who pick up the bagel and then cut through, what are you thinking?
You know? When I lived in Chinatown, my upstairs neighbor, who was a dim sum chef, scowled when he saw all of the pots and pans on this pot rack I had over the stove. And he suggested that I buy a good wok and then get rid of most of the other things that he thought would just clutter.
You do need one. I wouldn't get a wok. You know, with an American stove, the wok doesn't work as well. Woks are designed for stoves that have a well in them, and then you fit the wok into the well, and the fire goes, you know, caresses the sides, and you get a lot of heat.
And many Chinese stoves have superchargers on them as well.
Exactly. And so for a regular American stove, I would get one good, big, heavy skillet. Either a skillet or a sauté pan. Do you know the difference between a skillet and a sauté pan? I just learned this, and this is fascinating. A skillet has the sloped sides, and a sauté pan has the straight sides. And you use them for slightly different things. They're pretty much interchangeable, except for if you have a sauté pan and you have a tight cover, it can also go in the oven. So that eliminates the need for a roasting pan. If you have a big sauté pan with a cover. You just put your roast in there. You can put a rack in it. You can roast a chicken directly in your sauté pan. It's very handy. So make sure to get one with oven-proof handles, not with like a plastic coating on the handle, you can have the option of putting it in the oven.
Or just cast iron?
Cast iron, exactly. Cast iron is great. Gets really hot, though, folks. So don't forget, please, you know, have a good oven mitt is essential. Don't rely also on those towels.
But they were the original nonstick pans.
Yeah. They still are. They still work better than most nonstick pans if you keep it seasoned.
What about Dutch ovens? A listener wrote in, said a Dutch oven, Robin, on our Facebook page, a Dutch oven is essential. I have the 7-quart size to use for making chicken stock and stews. You can make pretty much anything in them. You can make Jim Leahy's
bread. Exactly. Yeah, Dutch oven is great. A nice cast iron Dutch oven.
But Le Creuset is so expensive, isn't it?
You don't need to buy Le Creuset. Le Creuset is good, but there are others. What you're looking for in a Dutch oven, personally, I like a round shape rather than an oblong shape, but either one is fine, than an oval. Either one is fine. What you're really looking for is the right size, the size that works in your kitchen. 7-quart is perfect. It's bigger than most of them. Most of them are 6-quart. So 7 or 8-quart I would recommend, because then you can do something like a soup or a chili in it. You have enough room.
Well, I'm going to go through some of these other questions that listeners have written in before I go back to my own questions. How do you season a new cast iron pan? Do you have any tips for keeping it seasoned?
Well, you season it, you can follow the directions on the pan. I just usually rub them down with oil, and then you put them in a low oven for about an hour, and the oil really absorbs. By putting it in the oven, what happens is the pores of the pan actually open up from the heat, the oil gets absorbed, and then you let it cool, and then you wipe out any excess oil. But you must keep it seasoned, and the best way to keep it seasoned is to fry lots of oily things in it, and then don't use soap when you wash it out. Hot water and just a scrubby brush, and that's all you need, and then dry it immediately.
Can you just use some kind of cheap vegetable oil and heat it up and then wipe it out? Is that
That's
some
fine.
People just put salt on it as well to scrub it
instead of using water, just to use soap. People do that. I've never done that. It just doesn't feel clean to me. But I think you must dry it really well. And a good way to dry it is to put it on low heat on your stove, and it'll dry out.
Meg in Stanford asks, can you talk about ceramic knives? I have one and love it for the sharp edge, but I'm on my second one because they're delicate and I've broken 2 tips.
I have broken the tips off mine too, so I'm with you. I know, I feel your pain. They're wonderful knives. You need to handle them carefully. Don't drop them. You know, I've dropped mine many times. I get it, especially if you're dropping them onto a marble counter, if you have like a stone counter, they will break. So ceramic knives, fantastic, super sharp, but very fragile.
My guest is Melissa Clark, who has written, I still can't believe it, 32 cookbooks.
You know,
and she's
I don't
so
sleep.
Young. She writes a weekly column for the New York Times called A Good Appetite. Leo left this comment. He said, I really want a mandolin for slicing potatoes and other vegetables, but I'm bewildered by the range of brands and prices. Is a cheap one okay?
Yes.
Or is it worth shelling out for more money for it? And what about the safety? Because a lot of people talk about cutting off the tips of their fingers, or worried, at least are worried about cutting off the tips of their fingers with a mandolin.
I have done that. Not exactly the tip, but I've gotten some mandolin cuts. Be careful. Definitely be careful. I use a cheap Super Benreiner. It's under $50, and it is perfectly fine. Again, the thing about an inexpensive Japanese mandolin is that when it gets dull, you can replace it. I mean, I hate to sound so expendable, but for something like a blade, it's really important that you want your mandolin to be sharp. And my Benreiner, I've had it for 10 years. It's still going strong. So don't worry about getting an expensive brand. Do worry about being very careful. I actually have one of those gloves, those silver gloves. Use that when you're using a mandolin. It gives you good grip. You can hold on to the vegetable, and you don't have to worry about cutting your finger.
There are a lot of specialized gadgets that might be useful for one specific thing, like avocado slicers, egg. Although the best avocado slicer is simply a knife, and then you stick it into the
right.
pit and pull it out.
Exactly.
But there are egg slicers. There are cherry pitters, apple corers, apple peelers. How many of them are really worth the drawer space?
You know, you really need to know yourself. I mean, do you really want an avocado slicer? If that is your thing and you eat 15 avocados a day, okay, you know, that's worth it. I'm a cherry pie fanatic. As soon as cherries come, and I make my own maraschino cherries. I love cherries. So I actually have a giant German cherry pitter that I keep in the basement. I haul it out in July, and then I put it back down there in August. And so it's worth it for me. But if you don't use, you know yourself. I mean, don't get a cherry pitter if you don't really care about cherry pie.
And then some chefs and cooks don't approve of garlic presses. Others swear by them.
Again, I have no problem with a garlic press. I think they are very useful. And if you want to use a garlic press, go ahead. They're small. They don't take up a lot of space in the drawer. So if you think that it might be something, you know, I always say, if there's a tool that's going to make you cook and it's going to make your life easier and you like it, go ahead and get it.
And then there are garlic peelers.
Yeah. Garlic peelers, again, if it's going to make, if you're not going to use garlic without a garlic peeler, they're not expensive. Try it. And if you don't end up using it, if you haven't taken it out of your drawer in 6 months, so give it to somebody else or give it to Goodwill.
But can't you just peel a garlic by cutting off the
yes.
ends and smashing it with the side of a knife?
You can use your cleaver. with the side of a knife works great. I don't use either a garlic press or a garlic peeler. I don't think you need them, but I don't want to say categorically no to people who might, you know, find it makes their lives easier.
And what about lemon zest or orange zest? Some of your recipes call for them. Do you need a zester?
You do need a zester. A zester is invaluable. You cannot get that fine zest without a zester.
You can't just use a potato peeler for that?
Yeah, and then chop it up. A zester is one of those, and they're so skinny, and they're so long, and they just fit so nicely in your knife drawer. So I would say get yourself a good zester. We all love microplanes. You can use it also for chocolate. You can grate chocolate on it. You can grate Parmesan cheese on it. You can find, once you have your zester, you're going to be using it for a lot of different things.
We've got to take a little break, and when we come back, we invite your calls at 212-433-9692 and continue leaving comments on our show page at WNYC.org or on our Facebook, or you can tweet us as well. I keep on forgetting to say that, but luckily our listeners know all about that. My guest is Melissa Clark. Her latest cookbook, her 32nd, is called Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. There's also her weekly column in the New York Times. And what did you make this week? I forgot.
Scones, savory
oh, yeah.
scones. You need a good skillet for that because you caramelize the onions until they're nice and brown.
We'll be back right after this. We are back with Melissa Clark, whose latest cookbook is called Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. But we're not talking to her about those recipes or the things she writes about in the New York Times article she does every Wednesday called A Good Appetite. We're talking about the things that you must have in your kitchen And one of the points you made was you have to know what you like and mm-hmm. what you cook. So for one person, it would be absolutely important to have 20 knives. And for the next person, it's okay to have two knives.
Absolutely. And the same thing with, you know, we were talking about cherry pitters and avocado slicers. Also, something like a food processor. People always ask me, you know, should I get a food processor? Because they're big. They take up a lot of space. I say, If you can afford the space in your kitchen to absolutely do it, it just makes things so much easier.
Well, some people say you can do the same thing with a blender. And then there are
right.
these food processors that are much smaller now, and they actually can be stuck in a cabinet.
Right. Especially they're lighter than they used to be. You know those big old heavy ones? You'd put them in your cabinet, you'd never take it out. It was like a brick. The smaller ones, much easier to maneuver.
But what do they – can you do the same thing with a blender and a food processor?
You know, you really can't. I mean, there are certain things you can do. You can certainly puree in a blender very easily. But you cannot julienne or shred, which I use my food processor for all the time. Shredding is big. To make potato latkes, you can't do that. You know, but also cookies and cakes and breads, all of those things you can do in a food processor just as easily as a stand mixer. And you cannot do those in a blender.
So you don't think we need a stand mixer?
Not necessarily. Not unless you love to bake. If you love to bake and you're the kind of person who everyone calls you up and asks you to make their birthday cake on their birthday, then yes, get a stand mixer. But otherwise, just get a food processor and a little hand mixer.
We go now to Lisa. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Ms. Clark, I love your columns. I read them all the time.
Oh,
wouldn't
thank
miss
you.
Them. That was actually why I was calling. I don't have a food processor. My mother offered me her Cuisinart, which is big enough to bathe in.
I don't recommend doing that, though.
No.
So unless the blade is dull.
Yeah, almost as dull as I am. But I find myself, you know, not being able to make a lot of recipes that call for a food processor. So I was wondering, I mean, you had mentioned that there are smaller ones on the market. Because I have a small kitchen, what's the smallest I can pretty much get away with, yet still get most of, not necessarily all of the elements of a large
right.
one? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I don't know the brand, but I can tell you about the cup size. You know, a standard, the very small ones are about 2 cups. You know, they're teeny.
Uh-huh. And they're those called are mini choppers.
Mini choppers, yeah, those are too small. I would say you need at least a quart, at least 4 cups.
Okay.
And the big ones, I think, are 2 quarts. So if you have a 1 quart, you're fine, and you can find many different brands in that size.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You are so welcome. Enjoy it.
But one of the important considerations has to be the power of the motor.
Yes.
Because some of them,
very quickly you start smelling
the burning of electrical
exactly.
equipment.
Exactly. The second you put in something like ginger to chop up. Yeah, I would say, you know, there's middle ground there. You know, you don't have to spend a fortune unless you think you want to keep it forever. And in which case, then spend the money, get something really good, something that'll last.
We go now to Allison in New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm really excited to speak with you. My husband claims I have too many whisks.
And
I love them, and I'm not sure exactly what I need to keep. I have one with a ball inside of it, and then there's a little whisk inside of
yep,
the whisk.
Yep, yep.
I have every size, large, medium, small, tiny for eggs.
That's really funny. I have a lot of whisks, too. Honestly, the plainest, simplest one is the easiest to clean. It's the
okay.
easiest. What you really want to make sure that you have a whisk for is to beat air into something. You know, that's the point of a whisk. Aside from mixing things up, you want to beat air into it. And so the bigger the whisk, the bigger the bulb, the more air you're going to be able to beat into it. If you have one with a stainless or dishwasher safe handle, that is great. I mean, my favorite one is this great big wooden handled one. It's got a huge bulb on it, but I can't put it in the dishwasher. So if you have a stainless steel one with a nice big bulb, that nothing inside, none of the bells and whistles, just something plain, because you don't want grease to get trapped in there, or you can't use it for egg whites. So that's important. You know, those kinds of, they might be good for whipped cream, but they're not
right.
as transferable. I mean, maybe you should keep 2 or 3, but, you know, get rid of the rest.
Okay.
The whisk with the ball on it, is that specific for something?
I think that's for cream. You know, I've actually seen those, and I've never used it. I think it's for whipped cream, though. I think it's supposed
okay.
to speed up the agitation of the cream. Do you know about that, Leonard?
No.
But, again,
I have a whisk with a ball, but it's really for the handle.
Okay.
A small one.
Right, because it's more ergonomic.
But if I were doing whipped cream, to be honest, I'd probably use a hand mixer.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier.
One of my favorite tricks for whipped cream, though, have you ever used a jar? If you don't have a whisk out there and you want to make whipped cream, put it in a jar and just do a little shake, shake, shake.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
It'll thicken
and that
up.
That works?
You have to be careful not to take it too far or you're going to get butter. But if you do it, and you know, it's kind of a fun dinner party trick. Pass the jar around and let everybody do a couple of shakes. Let them dance. It's, you know.
Well, if you do it too long with whatever, you're going to wind up with
you're
butter.
You're going to wind up with butter, exactly.
And then you can't reverse it, unfortunately.
No, but you can drain off the milk and actually use the butter on bread.
What do you think about salad spinners?
Salad spinners, I didn't realize it was such a hot button issue. But, you know, they're huge. They take up a ton of space in your cabinet. I eat so much salad that for me it is just a necessary part of my day. Every day I make my salad, I spin the salad greens. I really like the kind with the pull string, you know, because I find that they're reliable. They go really fast. So I love my salad spinner, but you don't need one. Strictly speaking, if you have a small kitchen, a dish towel works perfectly fine.
On the other hand, if you also want to clean out spinach and really get rid of the sand,
yep,
or Swiss chard, then the salad spinner is quite handy.
Absolutely. And also, here's a trick that I learned. If you have a salad spinner with a basket that's, you know, that you can take out, a lot of them have the baskets you take out, you can double that as a colander and drain your pasta in it.
Well.
So there you go.
Pat from Atlanta asks, could you say something about pressure cookers?
Oh, yes.
Even recommend one if you think they're a good idea.
I do think they're a good idea. I got a pressure cooker, I think, in about 2000. And so 11 years ago, I used it obsessively for a few months, and then I put it in my cabinet and forgot about it. And I literally pulled it out 2 weeks ago or about a month ago to start testing recipes in it for a project I'm working on. And I forgot how great it was. I mean, they really... they cook things quicker. You know, we're all time pressed. So there's the tension between having no space and having no time. I really prefer homemade beans, especially right now. I'm a little bit worried about the
But are they doing the same thing that a slow cooker is doing?
Well, I mean, they're faster than a slow cooker. I mean, it's the same. If you're the kind of person who can get up in the morning and you have a slow cooker, or you can just even think about putting your beans in the oven. I love pressure cookers, by the way, for beans. Then you don't need a pressure cooker because time is on your side. If you're like the kind of person which I do often, I say, chickpeas, I want them now. And then that's when you need a pressure cooker, because then you can have chickpeas in 40 minutes instead of 3 hours.
We're talking about the essentials for a kitchen. And we kind of posited it as if you have a small apartment, mm-hmm, cramped kitchen. But in the end, these rules really apply to anyone, even somebody who has a kitchen is bigger than the studio.
You know, if there's space for something, you will fill it. That is the rule of nature.
My guest is Melissa Clark, who has been filling my bookcase with cookbooks. Her 32nd is called Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make, published by Hyperion. She also writes the weekly A Good Appetite column for the New York Times in its dining section. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopatin. You can reach us here at 212-433-9692. We'll leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Alan begs to differ with us on something. Alan from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. Is there really a difference between a grater and a zester? And also, is a nonstick, a good nonstick pan just as good as buying something that's designated as an omelet pan?
Okay, well, all omelet pans are nonstick pans. I mean, basically, an omelet pan is just a type of nonstick pan.
Right.
So you really don't...
I think he's thinking Teflon. Right, Alan?
Any nonstick.
Oh, okay.
You don't need it. Strictly speaking, if you have a cast iron pan and you keep it well seasoned, that will be nonstick for you. I also have a nonstick pan that I love. I love using it for omelets. It's not specifically an omelet pan. It's just a good, heavy nonstick pan. But it's worthwhile. You don't want Teflon. You really want to. There are a lot of other types of nonstick materials out there, and so I would say it's worthwhile investing in something that is not going to scrape off.
Uh-huh.
I like what Nora Ephron writes as in a recipe. She says, heat the Teflon pan until you see the carcinogenic steam rise.
Exactly. You know, you just can't. It does emit a funny little smell, too, doesn't it, if you get it too hot. But I would say that if you like to cook eggs and also fish, nonstick works very well for delicate fish fillets. I would say it's worthwhile. What was your other question?
His other question was about... The grater, whether you should use a grater or a zester.
You know what? A grater, one of those box graters that has the zesting holes on it, you can absolutely use that. But I do find that it's very wasteful because most of the grating sort of sticks in the hole, and then you have to stick a pin in there and get a fork in there and get it out. So yes, you can use it. If you don't grate a lot of citrus, it's fine. But I would rather have a microplane zester and no box grater, and then I would just use my food processor for grating. So that's my personal preference.
Crystal from Jersey City, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask Melissa what she thought about kitchen scales, because I recently got one with a tear function. It's completely changed my life.
Isn't it amazing? Don't you love it? Do you love it?
It's so amazing. I mean, I don't have to wash as many dishes because I'm not using the cups, and I put my mixing bowl right on the scale.
That's right.
And
just keep adding
every ingredient, and it makes it so much faster and wonderful. So I just wondered if you...
I want everybody out there to buy a scale, and I want every cookbook author and every newspaper and magazine in the world to use grams and ounces. I really do.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I totally agree.
Rose Levy Birnbaum kind of changed
she
the way
did.
People
Absolutely.
Bake cakes by going to scales rather than measuring cups.
She changed the way I think about it. I think any food professional really owes her a big credit. She really made it easy and accessible. And we, you know, at the Times, we just started adding grams to our baking recipes, and that was something which we had been talking about for a while. And I think that it's going to continue to grow in that direction.
Thank you.
Along those lines, could I ask one more question about weights?
Mm-hmm.
How much?
As long as you don't say wait, don't tell.
How many ounces do you think is in a cup of all-purpose flour? Because America's Test Kitchen says 5 ounces.
Yeah, or
King
4 ounces.
Says 4 1/4.
Yeah. Okay. You know, it's really funny. Every time I weigh, it's completely different. It depends. That's why it's much more important to do your recipe based on the weight rather than on the cups. I agree. I get somewhere between 4 and 5 ounces, depending on, which is about 130 grams, depending on the type of flour, how much air is in it, how much I've mixed it up before I measured it. It varies a lot, which is why there's
so much...
And the moisture in the air. And it varies. So it's very... it's better to... This is for people who are developing recipes. Start with the weight and then go back and do the cups.
So let's, since we're talking about baking, talk about baking pans. They come in all shapes and sizes. Not everyone needs all of them. How important is the right size pan when you're baking? Every recipe says... you get a 9 by 12, get a this, get a that. And sometimes I don't have that size in the house, and I wonder whether I'm going to ruin the whole thing.
You might, actually, especially if you do it in a pan that's too small, and then it bubbles up and gets all over the bottom of your oven. Here's a good tip for people, which I have been doing when I got tired of cleaning out my oven. I had this idea. I'll just put all my baking pans on a cookie sheet. And so anything that drips out, because it happens, you know, even if you're using what you think is the right size pan sizing is not a science. A pan that you think is a 9-inch pan might actually be an 8 3/4-inch pan, and that extra, you know, quarter of an inch that you're missing will cause your cake to bubble out. So it's very important to safeguard against that. But that said, no, you can, if you're experienced, you can absolutely change the pan size.
Round to square?
Round to square is no problem as long as it's the same size. What you really want to worry about is depth, the depth of the pan. If you are using something, if a recipe calls for, say, a bundt pan or a loaf pan, something that's very deep, the time in the oven is going to take a long time because it's going to be slow to bake. If you take that recipe and you put it in a very shallow pan, it'll bake a lot faster. So you have to watch the timing if you're going to change the pan.
Now, a bundt pan seems to me to be a total luxury. I mean, how often do
I
make
bundt
cake?
No, it's a necessity. If you make bundt, no. I mean, it's true. You can use 2 9-inch loaf pans instead of 1 bundt pan, and the timing will be about the same because the depth is very similar.
We go now to Seymour. Hi, Seymour.
Oh, hello. Forget your name. Forget.
It's okay. Just ask the question, Seymour. We don't have a lot of time.
I was just mentioning about the food processor and blender, because I have a food processor and blender. And it works very good. You know, I've bought it at BJ's and Costco. And, you know, it doesn't...
You mean it's a combination?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. You know, a lot of food processors will do what a blender does. So you can get something that will do both, and that is a good way to save space.
Now, I thought Seymour was going to ask another question, but I'll ask it. He was originally going to ask about getting sand out of stuff.
Oh, sand is your enemy.
Because you can rinse spinach 100 times and still wind up with some grit.
Yeah, I mean, a salad spinner is great. It really is great for that. But here's another trick which doesn't require any equipment whatsoever. Fill your sink with water. put your spinach in and just let it soak. The longer you let it soak, the more, and agitate it, you know, run your hands around the spinach. And all the sand falls to the bottom, then very carefully scoop the spinach off. You don't need any equipment for that.
Do you have any good organizing tips for fitting everything into a small space? Because that's another problem.
Yeah, I nest things for sure. I mean, I nest my saucepans. Obviously, you're going to nest your bowls, of course. But nesting saucepans and skillets, what I like to do is I put a piece of paper towel in between each one just so that they're not rubbing against each other. And also, you know, pot racks, like you were saying, pot racks are great. You have space right on your ceiling that you're probably not using if you don't have a pot rack. So go ahead and get, and if you can, put in a pot rack.
Spices can also be a problem.
Oh, spices are. The most embarrassing part of my kitchen is if anyone comes over and opens my spice cabinet, it will basically explode into their face. Spices are a real problem. I actually have no advice for that because I'm miserable at it. But I have a plan. One day I'm going to get all those canisters of the same size and the same shape, and I'm going to get a label maker, and I'm going to label everything. But, you know, when I have time, when I'm not writing cookbooks, I'll do that.
City dwellers are luckier than some others. Well, some people grow the stuff right out of their back door. But
yes.
We want something, we can just run down to the store to get it usually. Are there certain things that we must have in the house at all times?
Equipment-wise or food-wise?
Food-wise. Food,
yeah, I mean, you have to be able to make dinner at the last minute when there's nothing in the house for dinner. And you need your bag of pasta. You need your good olive oil. I need lemons. I can do pasta, lemons, good salt, and olive oil, and that's dinner.
And what do you cook your pasta in? Because there's a disagreement. The Times had a piece that said you don't need to cook a billion gallons of water to make pasta. In fact, just a normal amount would be perfectly fine.
Yeah, the latest pasta cooking theory is that you can use a small pot with less water and it will cook it perfectly adequately. I go with the Italian grandmothers on this one. What can I say? I like the big pot. I mean, it might be a waste of time to wait for it to heat up. It might be a waste of electricity or gas, actually, to let the water come to a boil. But, you know, it's hard when you're used to doing something a certain way. I'm going to try it the other way, but I haven't. If any listeners have done that,
I've
please
done
let
it.
Me.
I do it, okay. I do it in a
you do in a small pot. Okay.
Smaller pot. A wide, smaller pot, and it cooks perfectly fine.
Okay. I'm going to try it then. You've given me courage.
I mean, you have to have enough water to cover everything. Hillary on Facebook asked, what do you think of mushroom brushes? And should you wash mushrooms?
You don't need to wash mushrooms. You can wash mushrooms, by the way. They don't absorb that much water. You know, there's a myth that if you quickly rinse off mushrooms, if they're going to absorb a lot of water and become tasteless. I mean, yes, if you soak them in a big thing of water for 2 days, they might. But a quick rinse in your sink is perfectly fine. But you don't need to do it. You can take a damp paper towel and just rub the surface of the mushroom. It'll take off any dirt. And that'll work just fine.
We have lots of calls still coming in and people making suggestions. I'm just going to read one. Listeners are offering alternatives to salad spinners. There's a collapsible one. And then at Zabar's, there's a plastic bag with a spout at the end. And there's an old-fashioned alternative, a cloth towel. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody said, you said that already, yep. Which you can hang up on a shower rod to dry afterward. There are all sorts of ways to get around having limited space, but I think I have a pretty good idea of what I should have in the kitchen after this conversation. And thank you so much, Melissa Clark, for being with us and being such a good sport and answering all these questions. Melissa's latest book is Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes That You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. And, of course, Melissa is in the New York Times every Wednesday with her column, A Good Appetite.
Thanks
for being back.
Thanks so much.